This is Godfrey in New York. I know you'll understand if we don't plunge into our usual bag of music and pleasantries today. Once again, history has brought us up short. These many hours after that terrible deed, we're still stunned from the impact. I am grieving, we all are grieving, for a man and his family and for our nation. Yes, the bullets that struck Senator Kennedy also tore into the tissue of all America. I've been thinking back to yesterday morning. Fine, beautiful, early summer day it was in New York. I awoke early for me, 7 o'clock. And the radio brought the horrifying news of what had happened during the night. And on the way to the studio, I could see my own feelings reflected in the faces of my fellow New Yorkers. Shock, bewilderment, anger. I think what I felt at first was something close to a wave of revulsion, disgust with our times and our society. And then, of course, came the realization that I am a part of our times and society. The old writings of John Donne centuries ago. Remember? No man is an island. There was a terrible sense of having been through it all before, the events of yesterday. Maybe what the psychologists call déjà vu, already seen. It had happened before in Dallas, and that day the sun was shining, and it happened before a crowd of thousands in the open air. This time it was to happen in the small hours when dark prevailed everywhere in the land, and it was to happen in a small space, in the blur of a crowd, in the press of excited bodies, flushed and happy with political victory. And it happened while there was still lingering sorrow and anxiety over the very recent death of Martin Luther King. When I heard the tapes of the awful moment in Los Angeles, I heard the animal cries in the background, too. Raw, primitive screams for immediate vengeance. And I suppose we are to be thankful that men of reason prevailed, that history did not repeat itself entirely, that this time there was no repetition of the events in the Dallas police station, suddenly so vivid in our memories. In the hours that followed, there were more refined calls for action. Everywhere, it seemed, there was somebody saying, there ought to be a law. We can only hope and pray that reason will continue to prevail. Reason and a common faith that our way of governing ourselves is still the best system. The danger at hand, it seems to me, is that men of questionable purpose will find an excuse in what's happened to alter our system, to use our emotional state as a cover for rushing through some repressive laws that purport to cure the ills of society. In my view, it's not a time for hysterical action or pejorative oratory. I would think it's a time to sit down and have a cool, calm talk with ourselves. About what? Well, to begin with, we might just examine our tolerance of violence. I think of it every time I catch an inadvertent glimpse of a brawl or gunplay on a TV show. And believe me, it's inadvertent when I do. I wish the creators of some of our films could spend a few hours in the emergency room of a hospital, as I have. They would learn, to their amazement, I'm sure, that a man who has been hit over the head with a bottle or a chair does not get up and go about his business. Nor does a man who has been struck full in the face with a brass knuckles on a fist. He doesn't get up and start a dialogue with his adversary. We are told that that's what people want these days. Only it's called action, not violence. The best that can be said is that we have unwittingly created a climate for this sort of thing. And I think it's a perplexing state of affairs. We are asked to believe that our instincts make us gobble up all manner of fictional violence. Yet many of our lawmakers believe it is the mood of the country to restrict its liberties in the name of curbing violence. If we are all guilty in allowing a climate of violence to develop, then maybe it is human to try to direct our guilt at someone else, to transfer it so we can feel clean and innocent. Eh? If that's the case, we'd better develop some new insights into ourselves. If we have reached a time when presidential candidates can be eliminated with pistol shots, we're in a bad way. One GI in Vietnam spoke for a lot of his fellow soldiers when he said, "What the hell is going on back there?" I get a little worried when I hear people in responsible positions talking rather loosely about curbing crime. Surely everyone is in favor of that. The question is, how do we go about it? I don't know of any way we can legislate sick minds out of our society. Ours is a good country. Americans are, by and large, good people, with good hearts, with good thoughts, with high, lofty ideals. Sure, we have sick people among us. A great many these days. Most of the time we can't even recognize the criminally insane until something frightful has happened. You know, you see people walking the streets. Dirty, filthy clothing. Dirty, filthy, grimy-looking hairdos. And you think to yourself, they must be insane. They must be sick. And yet, sometimes you talk to them and the very one who gives you that creepy feeling just to look at him turns out to be quite an intellectual. And you wonder, why? How come a man with that much education, as articulate as he can be, as intelligent as he seems to be, how can he have such little respect for himself that he will appear on the public streets in filthy clothes and scraggly, horrible-looking hairdos? You just can't imagine why. How are we going to tell who is who? Who is insane and who isn't? As I say, we can't even recognize them until something frightful has happened. Nor do I know of any way in which we can write laws that govern the quality of our society. No. This will have to come from within. I mean, those changes of heart and mind that eliminate the meanness of spirit. The words of the late George Bernard Shaw come to mind. The worst of all crime is poverty. Yes. And in America, we, when it comes to poverty, have a rather sorry record of indifference and apathy. How can it be possible, we ask ourselves, that I heard the figure the other day in some report that I got that 30 million Americans go to bed every night hungry. It doesn't seem possible. And yet it seems to be the conclusions reached by a very able committee that devoted a lot of time to the study of the problem. A country as rich as we are, America is the richest country in the world, with the greatest technological advances. How is it possible that we have people who are going to bed hungry every night? One little soul. Because we have surplus food. It just doesn't make any sense. Of course, that poverty is what breeds the kind of anarchy that we're witnessing these days. True it is, as I heard someone say, that we've had violence. Violence has predominated many, many years of our history. From the very beginnings. It is true. We started out that way. And until half century ago or so, the Wild and Woolly West was full of violent characters and people who shot one another on sight. Sure, we've had violence in our history and sick people in our history. Ever since the beginning, ever since the Revolution and before that. But what I don't understand is how it can continue to persist in this beautiful land of ours, whose beauty is decaying slowly because of our apathy. How is it possible that so much of this violence seems to be prevalent today? Is it more than history will show? I haven't had a chance to check it again. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's normal. I don't know. But it certainly seems so unnecessary, so uncalled for now, especially nowadays. These hatreds, these racial hatreds, these hatreds that come about because of the poverty of one class of people as opposed to the affluence of another class. Class? What class? We are all human beings. There's no class. All of us have the same privileges of life, no control over our appearance on earth, and unless we're utter fools and take our own lives, no control over when we leave. But we do have control over what happens while we're here on this earth. And the blessings that are afforded to us here in this wonderful country that we take so much for granted, that we do not preserve, that we do nothing to curb, for example, pollution of our air and our waters, the ecological rape of the land. We've let it go so long that now it's going to take an all-out effort and a terribly expensive, frightfully expensive effort to right these wrongs. And from all these neglects that we are guilty of, you and me, you and I are guilty of these things, every one of us. We're guilty of these hatreds. We're guilty of permitting these hatreds to fester within the nation because for so long we have paid no attention to the poor section of the country, of the city. As we drove through the little towns, we get to the outskirts, and this is the poor section. This is the colored section. And we grimaced a minute and shrugged our shoulders and drove on. Long, long ago, we should have made it our business to see to it that such ghettos just didn't exist. Long, long ago. Long ago, we should have provided training for underprivileged, undereducated people, for jobs that would mean something to them, instead of offering them menial, horrible work that has no future whatever. All of these things should have been done years ago. We have to do it now. Right now, too. I mean, we have to get going today. We should have been there yesterday.
You've been listening to a special broadcast of Arthur Godfrey Time. This is the CBS Radio Network.